Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you and my guest, or our guest, for the next hour. So nice to have you with us on this December the 23rd on the western coast of the United States, or if you live on the East Coast, a more central time zone, in fact, anywhere east of the East Coast, say Europe, for example, or the Middle East, Russia, China, South Korea, wherever. You are already celebrating, if you are a Christian, you're celebrating Christmas Eve. So I would like to wish everyone a wonderful Christmas Eve this evening. And we apologize for the short delay. We had some technical difficulties. I guess we're making some new connections with some new equipment and tweaking everything. So when that happens, you know, if you haven't heard an announcement, you know the show's going to go on. So with that said, I'm going to go right into introducing tonight's guest. He is a civil rights attorney and also has taken on the big boys as an antitrust attorney. He wears many hats. He has over 100 websites. In fact, he has a new one that he's going to tell us about tonight. And before we get into that, we're going to talk about some current events, probably some of the issues surrounding these scandals that still seem to be going on Wall Street, and it just blows my mind, and probably yours too, that the masses can't seem to get a handle on what's going on. Of course, they rely on the mainstream media. They watch TV shows like Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? And, of course, whoever came up with that idea obviously isn't, and they're trying to gear these TV shows to the lowest common denominator. I think it's not even room temperature IQ anymore. It has more to do with the global warming we're experiencing, according to Al Gore, where we have temperatures below 10 degrees in many parts of the country, wind chill factors of 30 or 40 below, several feet of snow, and we are in the midst of global warming. It's just more nonsense, and so tonight's guest is going to help us sort some of that out, and he has been on the show a number of times. He's actually becoming a good friend of mine, and hopefully yours, and we are going to offer some solutions tonight and discuss possible things that we can do to stop this madness. With that said, I welcome to the show, again on Evident Footprints, Mr. Carl Pearson. Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. It's always a pleasure, and let's fire away and see if we can solve the world's problems.
Okay. With the two of us, we can do it, I know.
Well, a little bit of help is all we need, and your listeners can provide that.
Yes, they often do, too. I get email from them. Of course, I can't always get to it the way that the email systems are being invaded by the alphabet agencies these days. But when I can, I get some messages from folks who are appreciative of the shows and want to suggest guests. And, of course, your name comes up all the time. They really like what you're bringing to the table. You were mentioning something that you were reading this evening, and I wondered if you've read enough that you want to talk about this issue of the Madoff scandal that's going on right now, or Madoff. I don't know which pronunciation is correct.
I'm not sure.
Madoff sounds good when you're talking about money, right?
I think it's going
made
to
off with
prevail.
The money.
It will prevail, I think, Madoff, who made off with a lot of money. But, you know, I think that if you have a Ponzi scheme, it isn't necessarily so that there is, let's say, $50 billion of money that he's wound up with. Because a lot of the money in a Ponzi scheme is paid back to the people who gave money as a form of interest. So that it is entirely conceivable, but I don't think likely, that Madoff really wound up with nothing. He wound up, he claims, with $300 or $400 million. He's not sure exactly how much. And he has a few homes here and there, but that's only less than $1 billion of the alleged $50 billion that he took. But it is conceivable that he had to pay back that money, and the people who got their own money back then dutifully reported it to the IRS as income, paid a tax on it.
Okay, Carl, pardon me. I've got to ask Seth to turn your volume up in my headphone feed. I can barely hear you. So, Seth, if you're listening, please turn Carl's volume up, and we'll try again, Carl.
Okay.
That's better already.
Okay, I'm not sure. Maybe I'm the cause of it, but... let me just talk a little bit so the volume can be adjusted if necessary.
Okay.
So it's possible that the federal government got most of the money in the form of legitimate payment of income taxes on what was really just a return of capital.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's true, then there's a possibility that the federal government can be hit with a huge amount of tax refunds to the people that would file amended returns up to a certain period of time. You could go back for so many years, I forget how many, probably only 3 or 4 or something like that, and they could demand their money back because it was really, they didn't realize it, but they were just reporting the receipt of their own money.
Mm-hmm. Now, Carl, we had an instance that took place several months ago where, if you recall the time when Bear Stearns supposedly was insolvent or having these grave financial problems and they needed some emergency capital, of course, that was a smokescreen for the international payments related to the Wantagate scandal. And, of course, the foreign bank accounts, mostly the offshore foreign bank accounts, had been frozen under the Basel II restrictions to show source or, source of funds is what it's called. In other words, you have to show how you got this money, how you came to put it in that bank upon withdrawal, and they couldn't do it because it was hypothecated. And this would get reported to the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund. The World Court was involved in this because of this international scandal that had been going on since December of 2005, and the actual embezzlement of trillions of dollars by Bush 1, or let's call him 41, Clinton, and then Bush 43. Now, since they froze those accounts, they had to get money. They had to get cash to keep playing this Ponzi scheme called derivatives and hedge funds. Now, they don't report it as such, but I am convinced that through these Fidelity accounts, in fact, Fidelity was in the process of buying up a lot of bad holding company and insurance company accounts, and likely many of those accounts were placed through Bear Stearns. So in order to federalize all this, and that's what they're doing, really, they're trying to keep it all under their hat so that they so no one can investigate. In other words, you know, we have to have this bailout, we need to have this cash, and the people are going to have to pay for what? For the criminality that's occurred? For the theft that's occurred? We have to pay? I think that's absolutely insane, number one, to think that they can get away with this without anybody doing anything. Now, these deals that they're making with the Fed and with the Treasury and all these banks, which are privatized, and these brokerage firms like Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Citibank, Bank of America, Wachovia, Bank of New York, Mellon, on and on. There are a ton of banks, hundreds of them worldwide, and Deutsche Bank, which is involved in all of these mortgage scandals. This is the real reason for the bailout, and all we're witnessing now are scapegoats, probably people who don't want to play ball because on an international level, all of these people are going to be in deep doo-doo before this is over. What is your feeling on that? Does it sound like I know what I'm talking about here, or am I off base?
I've been reading a lot, and the more I read, the more I learn, and I just have this understanding that I just don't know at all what's going on, except our money is leaving. It's going into the hands of others, and it certainly isn't limited to people in the United States. I think it's worldwide. Our money in America is being drained, that we're losing the country. It's being handed over by our guardians, the elected officials and the appointees, are just giving our money and consigning the country to slavery for maybe the next 50 years. I mean, it's probably impossible to make up for all of the thievery that's going on, and there has to be some kind of a retribution down the line, and I don't know what it would be. I mean, is it going to be a bankruptcy of America? Do we just declare that the indebtedness that's issued is illegal? Maybe some of this debt should just be declared illegal as gambling obligations. Maybe we should just have the courts won't do it. But aren't derivatives really just a form of gambling? And isn't it illegal to have gambling? And isn't the indebtedness of gambling non-enforceable, for example? So this would be a creative way to just declare this toxic mess illegal, unenforceable, and just go on in life and let the people who were dealing in that take the hit.
Yes, well, if I can make a point here, and you may have an idea where I'm going with this. Yeah, the question would be, okay, who buys into these derivative funds? And derivatives are based upon capital that's out there in the form of collateral. In other words, something that can be cashed in for money, something that has real value. Now, what is real value? Real estate, land. How do you take over a country without firing a shot? How do you take over a country, take over the land of the country without starting a war in that country, like we did in Iraq, like we did in Afghanistan, like we have done in so many places? Despite the lies of the media, we know that it's being done and it has been done, and they plan on doing it some more.
They're pushing the people off the land, and they're doing it under the guise of law.
Yes, exactly.
Saying that here, that you've agreed to pay 800% interest per day, and therefore you can't do anything about it. We're taking over your property. So where is our protection in court? Where are the legislators? Where is anyone? Oh, we're going to fix that. That's called bailout. So they shovel money into the hands of the people who are doing this so they can even do it more.
Exactly. And what is ironic here is that the people who are in these accounts, in other words, the beneficiaries of the profits that are made from this Ponzi scheme, is all it is, because it doesn't really have a tangible collateralized wealth behind it. What it is it's playing on the existence that these properties are there. We take the money, and when it comes down to it, you take the property. but you have to take it from us. The judges and the attorneys and the politicians and the corporations are the beneficiaries. They have pooled their resources and their names into these accounts. Now, they've done it quite secretly, but we know who they are. We know who the judges are. We know who the politicians are. And this is being run for them by organized crime figures. But they are just as much a part of organized crime as the old Al Capones and the Dutch Schultzes and the Frank Nittys of TV and movie fame. The only difference is these guys wear robes. They're pedophiles. They hang out at Washington, D.C. parties with congressmen like Barney Frank, who runs a prostitution ring with little boys. I mean, we've heard these stories countless times. Books have been written. Documentaries have been written. Children have testified under oath in court that this has gone on. They've got pictures of it on the Internet. They've got films that they've made of this stuff. And all these judges, all of these attorneys are part of it. And that's who's making the money. That's who's breaking the law. The very people that are sending people to prison are the ones that are breaking these laws. Do you disagree with me on that?
I think the major beneficiary of this are the financial institutions. The capital values that are involved here are winding up in the hands of financial institutions, whether domestic or foreign, at this moment really no longer makes any difference. I think the banks of the world no longer having an allegiance to the United States, but being worldwide, global in scope, and having financiers from anywhere in the world and not necessarily the U.S., these people are winding up with the property. They take over the property, and the people you've named that assist them in that are commission merchants. They're getting a percentage. You're getting paid by the hour or maybe a finder's fee. But the property, when it's foreclosed, winds up in the hands of the bank. They own the property, and now they can sell it to someone else and go through the same scheme again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a refinement of your argument.
Yes. Now, I think under normal circumstances, to do that where someone is making a modest return on their money for loaning the money to these accounts where the money is being applied to projects that which create jobs or repair our infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, our publicly owned properties, I think that is a good idea. That's how it's been presented to us, but that's not what's going on.
Right. Here's the problem seems to be, I think, generically, that securitization doesn't create anything. It only piles indebtedness upon indebtedness and creates the greater potential of undermining the real economic activity involved. For example, when a company is sold to its employees, or when it's sold to a hedge fund, for example, it creates an obligation that the company can't afford to pay off, because basically it's the company, the economic activity, that's being burdened with all this indebtedness, and that activity has already given up its value. Somebody has taken the value out of the business and has left it with a huge interest rate to pay off. So the businesses can't make it, and the employees get fired. But the wealth has been taken from the company. Somebody that sold out and securitized, they created insecurity investments coupled or piled on top of an existing corporate structure, and it caused the company to collapse. That's one thing that's been happening here, that we have this securitization where we take something and create little tranches or cuts, investment peaks, little slices of investment, and market it throughout the world. But the people who create those little slices know that the value, that they sell it for far more than it's really worth, and the people who buy these little slices are being taken to the cleaners. So, and the investment really isn't there. It isn't worth what it's being sold for. But this is what Wall Street and investment banking does. And guess what's happened in the past week or so? The investment banking world has now gone into hiding, and they've become banks.
Yes, I've heard about that, and I've mentioned this a few times on the show. I may have even mentioned it to you, that I predicted which banks were going to start folding up or which investment firms, and to the T, they did it exactly as if they were following my lead. And the most recent ones, Morgan Stanley has come up, their talk, and then Citibank. We're talking about Citibank, which was the second largest of the central banks and had $2.015 trillion in assets. Now, how did they come upon that money? And if they have that much cash, how is it that they need to be bailed out? This is just smoke and mirrors to federalize all of this, and with the intention of really, you know, when they tell us it's federalized, they're still privatizing it. After all, they're telling us that we're hurting for money, but they don't tell the truth of why. They're merely stealing the money. There's no getting around it any other way. They're stealing the money. They're pretending that these assets are actually there, that have created these gigantic funds that that have been frozen, and they can't play with that money, so they had to come to us and tell us we had to save all of this corruption, which does nothing more than refuel it, perpetuate it. It's like throwing another log in a fire that is going to burn out eventually. Right now, they're out of logs. Now, I mentioned Bear Stearns a moment ago because right before the Bear Stearns collapse, and I use that word in quotes because they said it, we haven't seen any proof of that, there was a French broker who was suddenly discovered having swindled his clients out of $7 billion. And in actuality, the amount of money was $700 billion, but the guy didn't swindle anybody. You're talking about the same ring of thieves, and Sarkozy, the president of France, was involved in this. Here we have somebody being blamed for $50 billion. I would guess the amount is probably somewhere between $500 billion and $5 trillion. And they make these numbers up because, you know, it's easy to drop off a couple of zeros, just as easy as it is for them to add a couple of zeros. And a perfect example is when we had the first congressional vote on the bailout, and it was voted down. They were asking for $700 billion, and even though the Congress voted against it, the Senate voted for it. Now, that's the type of insanity there. They've got more control over 100 people than they do over the several hundred, what is it, 450-some or whatever? Or is it in the 500s?
435,
I don't,
isn't it?
Or 435?
Yeah,
okay.
So.
And then they come back and they re-vote on this, but now they up it to $850 billion. Now, the actual amount of money that's exchanged hands, it's come out, is over 8.5 or 10 times that money, $1 trillion. $8.5 trillion. With impunity, these people just steal the money and there are no consequences. It's quite evident what they're doing.
You know, one of the most popular stories of all times has been the auto bailout. I've been following that and watching different stories, and I came to the conclusion that it's all a fraud, and here's the reason why. That the auto bailout presupposes that the auto manufacturers cannot afford to go into bankruptcy, because if they do, the public would say that the warranty work that a purchaser gets, or the warranty that a purchaser gets when he buys a new car, possibly will not be honored, and therefore no one's going to buy from GM or Chrysler because of that possibility. So I'm saying, well, why do you give all that money now to these auto manufacturers when basically all that needed to be done is to have the government step in and say that we will be the guarantor of your warranty work, and that if you do go under and if there is no provision for giving warranty work, then we'll pay for it. We'll hire dealers to perform the warranty work. So the government did not need to give $17.4 billion to the auto manufacturers. They could have just said that we will honor the warranty obligations. See how simple it could have been? But
yes.
No, they didn't go that route. They gave away $17.4 billion with another $100 billion coming up.
Yes.
What they should have done is really put it into bankruptcy and make it competitive through the normal procedures that apply to you and me, but not to them.
Mm-hmm. The concept of a warranty is nothing more than an insurance policy for a certain amount of work that's covered by that agreement, that a person will recoup the service applied to that amount of money, even though the likelihood of that happening is very slim. And that money really is part of the insurance scam, and what comes to mind is AIG, and I'm sure there are other companies. Let me briefly relate something that happened to me just within the past few days. I got a telephone call from someone I did not know, identifying themselves as a representative of my credit union, and I asked the name of this individual, and the person gave me a name, and I made a note of that, and I had the person's telephone number, and the person went on to represent my credit union, and then I checked with my credit union about this person. Of course, the person is trying to sell me life insurance over the telephone. And he alludes to the fact that I filled out a card, which I did not do. But I asked him to send me something in writing along with a business card. Now, I've yet to receive anything from him, either the materials he professes to have, nor his business card. But knowing me, I went down the rabbit hole, and it took me to an insurance company in Waco, Texas. And guess who is the chair of this company? Former Congressman David Bonier. Now, it stinks to heaven. Let's put it that way. Smack is not the right word. It stinks to high heaven, this whole thing. So I raised the issue with my credit union about them giving my information to this individual. He worked out some kind of deal where they give all of the depositors a $5,000 life insurance policy for free. And I asked them, what do you really think that's worth? You know, it would be like going to a lawyer for advice and not paying him for that advice. How much would it be worth? In most cases, you are the exception, Carl.
Thank you.
But most, as you well know, you know, there's even that saying amongst lawyers, you know, if my counsel, if my advice costs you nothing, that's probably what it's worth. And I've heard that, and it's sort of an inside joke amongst lawyers or attorneys. But in this case, I asked them specifically, do you think you can enforce an insurance policy where there is no premium? And their response was, well, we gave them permission to approach anyone who filled out that card, which I never got. I don't know anyone else who got that card. I certainly didn't fill it out. And then they can sell additional products to you. Well, they lied about who they were. They lied about or this individual lied as if he was a representative of my credit union, and about my filling out the card and about the intention of his call. The whole thing was a hoax. And yet, when I tracked it down, guess what? The guy actually has his phone number is attached to several building companies. They do plumbing, they do flooring, they do windows, they do roofs, they do all the different aspects of home building, which is related to real estate. So
I wonder how much work they do for congressmen.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder how much work they do for David Bonnier. Now, there were two names attached to the number. One was the American Income Life Insurance Company, and the second name attached to that same number and address was David Bonnier. So, obviously, this guy is part of this scam, and they had to have somebody who knew what was going on in Washington be a part of it. Now, do I know specifically that he's doing anything wrong? Well, one of his representatives called me and committed fraud, wire fraud, over the phone. And I take it seriously. In my estimation, you know, a crime was being perpetrated. And I'm not at all fearful of talking about it on this show. Any thoughts on that?
Well, in New York State, we have several statutes that could be used to stop this activity. Sections 349 and 350 of the New York Business Law are against illegal or marketing or advertising activities that are inherently fraudulent or misleading, deceptive devices, artifices, fraudulent activities, all sorts of general things that could be used to stop that if people wanted to take the time. My thought is that there is so much activity going on in any one state that the Attorney General of the state is not in much of a position to do anything to stop the activity. You can bring five or six lawsuits or something like that, but you really need to have the law enforcement official in the town, somebody that can help the people in the town to report this activity to what I call the town attorney general, and let the town try to protect its people by going into court and stopping this activity and recovering damages that could be used to pay the town, to pay the injured people and to leave something for the town so that the town has the incentive of going after these people and stopping them. I think if you had 40,000 town attorneys general throughout the country, you would have a lot less fraud. But if you only have 50 officials in the government who can stop this, they're not likely to. They're too easily identified and too much on the move to higher office and in need of campaign contributions. For example, the Attorney General in New York State happens to be the second most powerful official in the United States. That's really interesting, but I figured it out when I ran for that office. I said, oh my God, the Attorney General of New York State is the second most powerful person in the country, right behind President Cheney. So, and the reason for that is that the Attorney General of the United States is not elected. He's appointed and he can be removed. So it's really the President of the United States that dictates what the Attorney General and other officials would do. But in New York State, the Attorney General is free to do anything he wants to do, and he doesn't need any laws, so he doesn't go to the state legislature and say, oh, please give me some more laws to enforce. He has plenty of them right now. So the Attorney General then doesn't need an opinion of law from anybody. He gives his own opinion. And he doesn't need to raise any money because when he sues, he collects billions of dollars a year from the people that he targets. Can you imagine one person having billions of dollars coming into him without any need to get the approval of anyone else in the world. That's
that's second to the Secretary of the Treasury, isn't it?
Well, that is correct, as we've seen it now. So, basically, if I'm right that the Attorney General of New York is that powerful, who did you think would become the next governor of New York?
Elliot Spitzer.
Spitzer became the governor. And he made a mistake because he thought that being governor was more powerful than being the attorney general. He wound up finding out that he was wrong. He needed the approval of people to function. And instead he announced he was going to railroad over them. He was going to knock them out of the way and do anything he wanted to, and he wound up getting thrown out of office. But who is now becoming the next senator of New York, probably?
Mario Cuomo.
Yeah, our attorney general, the guy that I ran against. So the attorney general's position is very powerful. In California, that's probably the third most important elected post in the country. It's also elected. 37 attorneys general are elected, and the rest are appointed. So the law is very powerful because without any permission, you can go after anyone you want. And the problem is, at the top, they don't go after the people they should go after. They go after small people. And they do that because it's politically palatable to go after small people. You have the whole might of the government going against a little guy that weighed meat a little bit excessively and charged a few pennies more than he should. And then they issue a press release saying, we got that butcher who had a heavy thumb. And the public says, oh, great. Because they get somebody like that, they must really be getting a lot of crooks. Of course, they're not getting a lot of crooks. They're only getting the least important ones, publicizing it, and then making themselves go to higher office where they can do more of the same.
Mm-hmm. Now, just to draw a parallel, and I've been following the Chicago cases that are going on in CPS and domestic relations and pretty much across the board, because they use their system to criminally impoverish the litigants in these marital disputes, and they take the kids away from the family and put them into foster homes and clinics, and they end up having all kinds of problems. Their identities get stolen. They launder the money from the proceeds of the properties that they seize illegally, but because it's a judge doing it, and because it's a big racket, they get away with it. Now, the Attorney General, Lisa Madigan, is involved in this cover-up as much as the judges are. And I know this from the documents and transcripts that I have read. I've read Sheila Mannix's lawsuit against Lisa Madigan, and here she is on TV talking about how she's going after criminals like Rod Blagojevich, the governor, when to me it looks like a setup. It really does. What the media is reporting, and when do they ever report the truth? They're reporting something else and to hide Obama's ties to all of these shady characters. And still, that diverts the attention away from this birth certificate issue, which still is not dead. So, you can understand how, you know, this is just like a black widow's web, and it just doesn't stop. It just keeps going and going and going, and as long as people are believing what they're reading in the papers or listening to on mainstream TV or radio, they think they're hearing the truth. And nothing is further from the truth.
Have you ever heard of the website Daily Kos? Kos spelled K-O-S, Daily Kos.
Yes, I have.
I had an idea that Kos, K-O-S, referred to crock of shit. So I indexed, or I went into internet, and I ran the name Daily Kos plus the phrase crock of shit, spelled with a K. And I came up with a lot of hits, and it looked like I was right in my understanding that that's what the initials meant, as well as being a reference to the last name, the first three letters of the last name of the founder. But anyway, I then decided about 4 days ago to set up a website that would explain where the bullshit is in the media on the major news stories that are coming down from the media. I wanted to have a website that would allow people to get the truth, at least an honest approach towards analyzing the news. So I set up a website, and I got it online in about an hour with the help of my son. And I call it Daily BSD, meaning to myself, bullshit deal, dailybsd.com. And I now have the website up and running, and I've exposed some of the things that I think need to be exposed, and I keep looking at stories and try to put on one new story a day. So the most recent story, I think, was the one on how the automobile bailout really is a fraud, that you didn't need to do that. And interestingly enough, there's no one else in the whole country, as far as I can see, who has analyzed this idea that you really only needed to give warranty work. You only needed to guarantee the warranty work. You really didn't have to get billions of dollars. And I'm curious why nobody else figured that out,
mm-hmm.
or why they're avoiding doing that. But that seems to be the real thing to do here. If warranty work is the only thing that's stopping bankruptcy, then just guarantee warranty work. Stop paying the probably $117.4 billion that we'll wind up paying, and save that kind of money for the public. But you and I know we're not trying to save the public's money, we're trying to steal it.
Yes. Well, don't you find it interesting? Oh, by the way, I have to comment. If I didn't respect you so much, I would have really raised the red flag about the use of the S word. You've gotten away with using that more than all of my guests put together.
I won't use it again.
let's call it bull feces.
Okay.
just
the website.
You know, but it very accurately describes what's going on. So I'm sure my listening audience will forgive you, and with that understanding, we'll move past that. We'll try to raise the vibration or flush the handle, you know.
Great.
But I get the message. Now, what is that website again?
It's just dailybsd.com.
Okay. Dailybsd.com. Okay. Now that's not BF.
No.
It's
no.
BS.
B is
as in
boy Sam. Deal, as in
okay.
Deal.
Now, you're going to be exposing what on that site? I presume.
Well,
that's
I want to take main news stories that I see are wrong because they really truly omit something that distorts the whole story, and
mm-hmm.
and explain what I think the honest story should be, because we have a lot of instances where the truth is not told to the people, and I'm trying to find some instances where my own insight can provide a degree of truth that the public needs. So it's just an idea that I had. It's written in a blog type fashion where people can enter their own comments based upon what I say and let themselves be to discuss this in for whatever audience there is. So I've been trying to generate hits for the website by buying services, at keyword advertising services of some of the search engines.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I my philosophy is to try to buy words at a penny a click, so that I can get people to look at the website at a cost of a penny. And then hopefully that'll develop into word of mouth and
mm-hmm.
have a lot of people coming into the website. But it's very tough. It's tough to market a website. It's we're finding out that the website bubble is now bursting, and that the social websites are not as remunerative as envisioned. and that I think even Daily Kos, which is very successful, just reported that they're not yet making any money. So if the most successful websites in some areas can't make any money, then the rest really have no hope. And the big money of going to these big social websites really isn't as profitable as people envision. So there's a reduction. This was an attempt to monetize website traffic based upon selling ads. And it's in a decline. But on the other hand, websites have taken away the income from the newspapers of the nation, where they are now going into bankruptcy and selling out and having much less value. They're trying to find a means of selling their falsity, their false stories, to another audience. They found that it wasn't profitable any longer selling their stories in print. People just weren't buying enough. And now they're stuck trying to find another way to sell their lack of truth.
Yes. Now, are you getting any hits on the site right now?
I don't even look it up.
Is it too young?
It's too young. I don't look it up. I just try to figure out ways to market it, put stories on, and see if the inherent value of it can somehow take hold. I've been trying to go into other blogs and use website blog activity to try to insert what I'm doing and the things that I say into other websites and blog activity, where people can say, oh, gee, that's a great idea. I think I'll look up and see what else he's saying. Because there's some kind of a thread like that you have to generate in order to get people to come to you and look at what you're doing. You want to get buzz. You want to get respected people to say, oh, I went to that website, it was great, and recommend you to others. It's a viral marketing that you have to learn in order to be able to try to compete here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed that Daily Kos is hidden behind the cloak of secrecy, but I see a red flag. I see something that I can actually compare to another spam generator that's out there that I recently received from a bank identifying themselves as the Bank of Tuscaloosa. I'm trying to think of what the address is. I think it's bankoftuscaloosa.com. And when you, if you do a Who Is search on that, you find out that it's an outfit. It's an a financial marketing firm out of Atlanta, Georgia. Now, why would somebody pretend like they're a bank from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and they're really in Atlanta, Georgia? That should put up a red flag right away. The thing is, most people don't do that kind of research. They click on the link, and then they've compromised their data. So these are nothing but phishing expeditions, and I'm spelling it with the PH, of course, because this is an attempt to steal or compromise one's identity and private information. And it's being tolerated. It's open season for these companies to do it. Most of the time, it's the NSA, the CIA, and other government agencies doing this out of Herndon, Virginia, or McLean, Virginia. And it's always the same IT companies, Network Solutions and Two Cows, Inc., are two very common ones. Once in a while, they get a little smart, and they have an outfit in Denmark or Holland handle it. It goes over to Australia. Then it goes to Houston, Texas, or Dallas, Texas, up to Toronto, and it ends back in the same originating point. It's always the intelligence agencies doing this because they are involved in the theft of this money as much as the governments and the banks. They're all working together hand in hand. So it doesn't even always boil down to, is this a credible website? Many times it's just more of the same pabulum that they're spreading on TV and on the radio and in the mainstream newspapers. I don't know if you've... I mean, I've become quite expert at investigating that, so I hate to burst anyone's bubble, most of all yours. I'm just pointing out that we put all this faith in this journalism coming out of some of these sites, and they're operating as a mind control venture. Somebody's running it for them, but ultimately it always leads to the same destination.
How do we tell the good from the bad?
Well, you can feel it through discernment. You know, if it doesn't feel right, or there's kind of a funky aroma in the air, you know you're onto something. I'm being recognized worldwide for this ability to sniff this stuff out, and I'm pretty good at it. Sometimes it only takes me 5 minutes to figure it out. Sometimes I got to spend 15-20 minutes. But I'm building a huge case to show people what is going on. And I've been interviewed on other shows where we discuss these actual facts, because people are paying enormous sums of money to protect their data. They're buying software which has already got the back doors into their system. These people can turn your computer on when you're asleep at night and steal all your information, go through all your files, and you never know they did it until you recognize that you've got a spy bot or a virus that they've left there.
I had a virus come into my computer the other day, and it's one of the worst ones, and it attaches at a very at a file that's part of the core of the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's still there or not, but it was doing a lot of things that it would have a pop up that I couldn't get rid of, and I put a couple of antivirus programs on it, and I seem to have quieted the thing down, but I'm worried that it's just sitting there waiting to pop up again, trying to allay my fears. This virus is known for taking your bank account numbers and code words and things like that, and stripping your bank account of its money.
Yeah. What I recommend to folks, now I haven't tried this, but I have studied what Christopher Story, the journalist from the International Currency Review and many other publications in London, England, has done. He's found a proprietary software that he says eats up anything the NSA can throw at you, anything the CIA can throw at you, or any of these other internet companies that they secretly run. And he's been able to, it's probably less than even some of the commercial software packages that are out there. But I'm inclined to agree with him. Most PC owners that I know that have McAfee or Norton or, you know, the mainstream viral software are being compromised just by using that software. And even the new Vista operating system is basically an acronym for them virtually getting into your computer and stealing the data. And everybody who's using Vista is describing these problems to me, asking me what should I do. And I tell them, well, get a Mac. It doesn't mean that you're not going to have problems, but you're going to have a lot fewer problems, because the majority of people are using PCs, and the viruses have been out there forever. Stop and think how much money has been made by Bill Gates alone in the creation of all this different kind of software that really doesn't have to be changed every year or two. It's just that they limit what you can do if you don't have it, and when so you get it, And when you get it, you get all the bells and whistles that are really sneaking around to mess up your operating system, which is what you're describing. And it's very common. I tell people this. Anybody who I know that's gone from a PC to a Mac, and I don't make money from saying this, you know. I should. They should pay me a commission. I've sold Apple a lot of computers through clients that I've represented over the years in the music business. And they're well known for graphics and music and performing very difficult multitasking. They're very powerful computers, and they have a lot fewer problems. Now, I get spammed. I trash it. I report it. Does it stop it? No. I think the way to stop these things is to expose them for what they are and let people know, and you know, names and addresses and phone numbers and all of this stuff, their websites, all of this to let people know, look, this is what's going on. People can start figuring this out eventually because I'm talking to people that have these problems every day. And it's part of the corruption. It's part of the bigger picture that they're trying to put on us as citizens to cause us to have to pay for their corruption. I mean, that is the ultimate insult. It's one thing to steal, but then to say, you know, we've got to take this money. We're going to create a law to take more money from you to replace what we've stolen with the intention of stealing it while they're doing it. The insanity. So I bring that up merely because it's just another illusion, and we've got to start, as you mentioned, we've got to start coming up with some solutions to change this paradigm to something that's got more promise.
I think local banks can prosper once again if they just stick to servicing the local area and not try to be a worldwide, global place for people to launder money and all that. If you could just stick to the basics of banking, you can have more protection locally and have a prosperous bank and not be part of a chain. I think a bank can survive if it just services the community, and it should get the patronage of the community and try to help people in trouble and go back to what I call the It's a Wonderful Life type of banking activity.
Mm-hmm. People are under the impression, Carl, that when they borrow money from a bank, that it's the depositor's money that's actually being lent out to them. And that's not the case, is it?
Well, not with the way the major banks are working. I mean, who knows where the money's coming from? It might be Mideastern oil potentates. I mean, who knows where the money's coming from? But it could be from the securitization by the sale of the mortgage immediately. They get the money back right away. But the activities of the major banks really has put them in a position where they don't care about the individual that borrows. They're not really concerned about that borrower, unlike It's a Wonderful Life, where James Stewart was very concerned about the people. Bill Bailey, or is that his name? He was concerned about the economic well-being of the people that lived in the town. And a bank should do that, and it can, and we're going to have to go back to that. But if we do, we can cut ourselves off from a source of major economic difficulty for us. We really should go back to basics
mm-hmm.
and try to undo and get away from the things that are causing these problems.
Yeah,
Having a local bank would help out.
Mm-hmm. I think his name was George Bailey, actually.
George, yeah, Bill was the brother that was in war. Something
yeah.
All sorts of people.
And Lionel Barrymore was the antagonist in the movie.
Yeah.
And let's see, we had Donna Reed was Mary.
Yeah.
I think her name was Mary Bailey.
Mary.
I remember.
Mary Bailey.
You know, that's a great story. And you know, when the envelope full of money was left in the newspaper, don't you think that was a subliminal message for all of us? Sort of like the Wizard of Oz. It was just a different version of the Wizard of Oz, in a sense. That I forget his name in the movie, but Barrymore discovered that money and put it in his pocket, and then became more vindictive, more evil than he had been prior to that, because he knew that the deposits were going to destroy the bank if they were lost, and he held on to them. So that's exactly what's going on today. It's no different from that movie.
So we can change things locally is really what I'm hoping, that we can sort of forget about the evils at the highest levels of government and try to go back to basics, and we can do that, and maybe we'll have to be paying 20% of our value to pay off what's going on, but the other 80% can be made much better.
Mm-hmm. Now, what goes through my mind is all of this is being carried out with computers. And so, do you think it would be a good idea, at least in the sense of doing this over the internet or for the sake of stepping outside the box? I think the first mistake anyone could make is to restructure this whole thing and keep using the same system. May be convenient, but it's not going to change this paradigm in that way. In other words, we go back to old-fashioned bookkeeping and accounting practices, that where everything is above board, on the table, that you can actually see the documentation, and that it's not being infiltrated at 3 o'clock in the morning from some underground base somewhere where they've got a whole crew of people just doing nothing but running passwords, trying to get into somebody's account.
Well, if you have a local bank, the local bank would know you and be able to stop that kind of activity probably a lot better than a national bank or a globalizing bank.
Mm-hmm.
So just at a local level where they know you and know their customer, they could intercept some of these things. So that would be one of the advantages of having your banking being done by a small bank that cares.
Yeah, you wonder because there a lot of them have been corrupted. They got greedy. They were promised a lot of money at the back end of these scams, and it's turned out quite a bit different for them than they anticipated. Of course, you know, we're talking about the epitome of evil. So these people are spending all their time conniving ways to just perpetuate this. And all the while, you know, when you see a scapegoat come out, we've had two of them within the last week, Blagojevich and Madoff. That's pointing to something much more sinister that's going on. And
here's a possibility. Supposing that our government, past or present or both, has been engaged in drug dealing throughout the world in various parts, and that they are doing this to have vast amounts of income that can be spent that isn't on the books, and that this money has to wind up in several of the major banks. Because
do we have to suppose that?
Well, I'm hypothesizing that, and a lot of people believe it's actually true. And
yes,
if it is true, then what would be the likelihood of the people knowing about this and allowing it to do any investigation in the major investigation of the activities of the major banks? Because our government officials are compromised by that activity. The banks are participants, and the banks can do anything they want, knowing that nobody's going to go after them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, the perpetrators many times are on the board of directors of the banks, or they secretly own the banks. I mean, Bush did that very thing back from the days of Nixon. When he came back from his embassy job in China, the first thing he did was open a bank in Houston, and it was assumed that he was laundering drug money through it. And then it just escalated from there. I mean, it's another one of those phantom wars that we have. You know, we have the war on poverty and the war on drugs and the war on terrorism, and it's all a war. Let's have a war on government now. I mean, let's have a war on politics. That's the only one they haven't thought of yet.
That happens only once every 4 years.
Do you really think that happens?
Not really.
Exactly.
It's a pretend war.
Yes.
It's a war by consent.
Yeah, I think the Blagojevich story has more to do with Mayor Daley and Ed Burke, the head of the Democratic Party. I think he's an alderman now, and his wife is a Superior Court judge. I think that has more to do with those two characters. Watch what transpires. Now, Madoff, I'm not sure yet. I have a feeling that maybe the Clintons have some connection there. And I mentioned Robert Rubin because I think Madoff is connected to Rubin. Now, Rubin is presiding, unbeknownst to the mainstream public, I say mainstream public, those that follow the mainstream media, to Robert, to the Wantagate money. There's $14 trillion sitting in Citibank that they just had to bail out for, even though they claim they had $2.015 trillion in assets. Something's not right. None of it makes sense. And why is it that the public... And I don't mean Arthur Anderson. Why can't the public inspect these books? Why can't we get an army of accountants, CPAs, to go in and examine these books?
Because the firm will lose its other clients if one firm started to do that and push for it. They would lose their business and go out of business.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah.
You know, I feel for them. I really do. At this point, I'd like to take my $25,000, your $25,000, anybody that's willing to put their responsibility that's been, you know, this indentured debt that they've handed down to us towards investigating it. And let's see who comes out ahead in the end.
You know, the individuals that recommended the Madoff securities may possibly have to pay back this money. They were getting commissions and they were getting stock transactions. They were getting fees and things like that, and they were taking their money and giving it to Madoff without telling their own customers what was going on. Madoff had a rule that you can't tell anyone that Madoff is doing this. This is according to what I've been reading, that Madoff was quite secret about his own involvement as being the investment advisor to these, I guess, hundreds of fund-to-fund type deals where they would buy mutual funds of others that were managed by others. So the people that recommend purchases like that might well be liable. And it's interesting that Martindale Hubbell, which has recommended lawyers for the past 30, 40 years, they have an AV rating of lawyers. And I guess that a lawyer can pay to get that rating. If you don't pay, then you can't get the rating. But they just announced that they dropped the rating. They fired the person that was doing the rating, and they're going to drop the rating right on the day that the Madoff story was announced. And what it means to me is that they are looking upon this as a possible liability for them for having recommended lawyers that wind up in trouble. And they don't want to be sued. So this is one offshoot of the Madoff mess that the leading list of lawyers in the country is dropping its rating system for fear, I believe, that they will be held liable for recommending lawyers that are helping in doing some of this stuff and may themselves be doing some illegal activities.
Yeah.
They don't want to be accused of having recommended lawyers that are doing illegal activities. So it's a lot of changes coming up in the country as a result of what's going on. A lot of these changes are not good. It's going to cost us money. We're going to be working harder for less money. And that's the way the grand scheme masters wanted it to be. They're stealing our money, and we're not quite sure how they're doing it. But they're winding up richer and richer, and we wind up having less and less, and saddled with a huge obligation that we can never pay off.
Mm-hmm.
They really have bankrupted the country, and we don't see the final resolution of this yet, but we can anticipate that it's not going to get better.
Well, you know, I don't really feel one way or another for, let's say, the Saudis, for instance. They seem to have made a lot of money, even outside of the promises that they made. A lot of people aren't aware of the fact that when our oil companies went over to Saudi Arabia to help them develop their fields and start oil production, I'm sure they weren't shown the whole bag of tricks, number one. They were dependent upon consulting with these firms, even up to today. Many people aren't aware that we are part of OPEC, but that's never mentioned. It's always referred to as some outside group, just like they refer to Al-Qaeda. Everybody in the know knows that the CIA created Al-Qaeda and is running and funding Al-Qaeda from day one. So there's no big mystery. But what they did in order to facilitate the flow of cash into the hands of the Saudis from this oil production, and Lindsay Williams has said even today you can produce a barrel of oil in Saudi Arabia for 50 cents. Imagine that, and that they were selling it for as much as $160 within the past couple of months, a barrel. And not to mention what they get, how that mushrooms when they refine it and turn it into gasoline. They're charging us, what would a barrel of gasoline be? What are they, 55-gallon drums?
At $4, that's $200 a barrel.
Yeah, yeah, and they're still making out, plus they're selling the byproducts for plastics and all the other things that they make. So virtually they have no residue when they're done. All of this is being turned into some product. Even the asphalt is being put on our roads, which is why with all the money they're spending on roads, the roads end up with potholes within a matter of days. It used to be a few months. Now it's days. As if the quality of the asphalt is less. They just cut corners and skim money off of all the public projects that exist. Charities, schools, cemeteries, everything you can think of. Public projects are all stolen from and put into these accounts. And the oil companies, which have been making out like bandits, all of a sudden drop their prices to below $40 a barrel because now their intention, now that the Saudis' bonds have matured as of last August, this past August, that was the end of 30 years. Is it a coincidence that the oil prices changed all of a sudden? Took a little while for this to happen, but they did it shortly after those bonds matured. And now they're driving the price of international oil down because they want to destroy their capacity to make any money. They have the money. They've already stolen it from us. And they know very well what they're doing. So this is being orchestrated. now then you create a monopoly of oil. They can't afford to produce oil anymore. They can't afford to finish any of the projects, the building projects or infrastructure that they have going on. And as a result, they're going to just collapse. They're doing this intentionally. Then they can go in there and attack and take them over. This is just a fascist communist plot that's been going on since the beginning of World War II, and really long before that, when they first came here and set up the Federal Reserve. Even before that, which I've proven in my research. This is a long-term plan it's in its final act, so to speak, like a play. It's definitely been scripted, and a lot of thought has gone into it. The one thing they haven't accounted for is us figuring out what's going on. They really hadn't figured on, accounted on that.
Do you think that we're going to be able to get rid of the Federal Reserve?
It's going to get rid of itself. I mean, it's upside down, like $2.2 quadrillion right now. How are they going to? The only thing they can do is seize the land now, and that's what we really see going on. This is another aspect of what I've been saying.
Doesn't Sarbanes-Oxley require public companies to report an accurate statement of their assets? And if that's true, why don't the banks report their ownership in the Federal Reserve? Because the banks, from what we understand, are the owners of it, and the Federal Reserve it has a lot of money, and there ought to be some kind of reporting on the part of the owners of the Federal Reserve so we can see, you know, who owns what.
No, the banks aren't owning the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is giving permission to the banks to play the game that they play. They're owned by foreign entities.
I understand that the foreign entities were the banks that created this, and who knows who owns it now. But I thought it was the banks, some banks, not all, but the more powerful banks that own the Federal Reserve. They certainly are dictating the activities.
Yes. And then,
but we know nothing about that. We're not able to find out what that is, and it would be interesting if the true ownership of the Federal Reserve were reported on bank statements, you know, on the bank's own financial statements to see, for example, that Citibank may own 10% of the Federal Reserve. Who knows? I mean, I think...
Yeah, well, the actual owners of the Federal Reserve are the Depository Trust Credit Commission or Corporation, DTCC. 55 Water Street in New York. And another aspect of what they own is called Seed and Company, which is the assignment of all the stocks.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's in street name. They have it in Seed, and they make it tradable readily without having to switch from one name to another.
And they tell you that's for convenience and for your safety, but in reality, they hold the certificates in their name. I mean, talk about a Ponzi scheme. It's just another aspect, but, you know, to get people to wake up to this and realize what's going on, the way you deal with it is you stop doing business with them. You take your money out and convert it into something tangible. And then, you know, we have this aspect of stolen gold. It just doesn't end, Carl. Doesn't end.
Somebody's profiting, and this is the rich are getting richer. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing on my website, dailybsd.com, and that is this. Movement towards trying to limit executive compensation, it really is fraudulent, because it isn't the removal of high executive compensation that's the problem, because if you have excessive executive compensation, it means that you have excessive profitability in the underlying corporation, and that's what you should be attacking. You should
mm-hmm.
be like the banks, for example, have excessive income from charging excessive interest rates and late fees to their customers. So as an exchange for giving them billions of dollars, the government should have forced them into being more reasonable, have better policies that are less abusive. But they didn't use that opportunity to do that. They might have, but they didn't. So it's really anti-consumer. To give these people that are raping the public billions of additional dollars is just criminal. It's just unfortunate that they should do that and not even exact any kind of anything in return except that that possibly an executive shouldn't get as much money as he's getting. That doesn't do anything.
Yeah,
that's a sop for the public. But what they should have done is said no more late fees in excess of 20% annualized interest. So if a person is a day late, you shouldn't be able to charge $35. You might charge 10 cents, but not $35.
Yes. You know, our listening audience is probably as hip as any in the world to listening to this information and figuring out what's going on. This discussion could be boring to someone that doesn't really understand the finances, but to take what you just said and put it into a different perspective, it's like you go to the doctor and you're sick maybe once a year, and so the doctor charges you $100 for the visit and the examination and maybe for a prescription that he writes. Whether I don't recommend you get that prescription, but let's say that it's for an infection and you're not into trying herbal remedies, and so you want to go this route. Okay, so you do that by choice. So it costs you $100 for this service. But because I have been sick 4 or 5 times that year, he decides he's going to charge me $150 or $200 or more for the same service. That's what the banks are doing. Isn't that really a more accurate assumption of what's going on when they give people different credit ratings? In other words, you have bad credit probably because you've been paying more interest than other people pay. It would be easier for you to meet your bill if the amount of credit was fair, right?
What I've done in mortgage foreclosure cases, I've defended saying that the banks, through their illegal activity, have frustrated the ability of the borrower to repay the money, and that's a defense. The banks have caused this, and now they're charging additional monies and making it impossible for the borrower to keep his property. And this is done by the illegal activities of the bank. They're manipulating the real estate market. They're manipulating the market for mortgages. They're manipulating the appraisal market. They're using agents to go out and solicit customers and to give higher interest loans than the customer deserves in the marketplace. These are illegal activities, all of which is causing the cost of the mortgage to go beyond the ability of the borrower to repay, and the bank then winds up taking the property as a result of its illegal activities.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice if we could go after the pharmaceutical companies for selling these toxic wares that cause other diseases, other complications, under the nomer of adverse reactions and side effects, things like that. They report these things as if it absolves them when they're really not revealing the true nature of what they sell. You know, there are so many aspects of how corporations are bilking the public. And it's the pharmaceutical companies, it's the oil companies, it's the transportation companies, the manufacturers. I don't mean the single self-employed drivers out there that are just trying to survive. They're victimized by this just as much as us. They have to buy a vehicle to earn their living. They got to pay these fuel prices. Just the nature of the work they do is more hazardous in a sense to their health because of the nature of sitting in a truck and driving thousands of miles or maybe even millions of miles over a certain...
Don, what you're putting together, and I think I can sort of bring it all together here, and what you've said is that there are a lot of different industries that are stealing money from the public.
Yes.
And what is the likelihood that any one industry will blow the whistle on another thief? If industry A is stealing from the public, why would they want to report on B, C, D, E, etc., who are also stealing? They're allowing each other to steal. They're financing the elections of Congress people, elected representatives, and others who will not blow the whistle on any of them. But
mm-hmm.
they have to find somebody to blow the whistle against. So they pick on some poor, hapless individual, and the full force of the government comes down hard on that one individual. And the press picks it up and says, gee, our government is doing a great job because they went after somebody. Do you know that during the whole economic crisis in New York City, when I was on trial, I was representing a securities broker who was alleged to have taken $87,500. How much is $87,500 in the overall mix when you look at $7 trillion? How important is $87,500?
It's like a tip after a meal in a restaurant.
It's like one grain of sand on a beach that's 1,000 miles long.
Yeah.
Roughly. I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit. But would you believe that every single lawyer that enforces law through litigation at the SEC was in my courtroom at one time or another during that one-week trial, watching my trial, while all the Madoffs and all the other economic activity where the country is collapsing, they weren't enforcing anything. They were looking at my trial for $87,500.
Because your trial would open the door to...
No, my trial was the only thing happening.
Huh. My goodness. Did
when
you win, by the way?
Collapsing, no one was doing anything. The naked short-selling, nobody was doing anything. All of these toxic mortgages, all of the derivatives, all of the credit swaps, nobody was doing anything. Madoffs and who knows how many others. All they were interested in was getting my guy... for $87,500.
It's a pretty pathetic state of the justice system, isn't it?
Yep.
It's spelling it J-U-S-T space U-S, just
yep.
us.
Yep. So they have government trained to go after the inconsequential, to go after the people that don't count, and that is what protects the others who put the people there. The ones that finance the campaign, the ones that steal all the money, they get a little bit back, and it isn't much. It's less than 0.1%. Maybe it's 0.001%. A little drib here and there, not much, and that elects a person. Compared to the money at stake, they throw very little at the politicians, and the politicians gladly take the money. They get elected, and they know what they have to do. And they have to leave the big guys alone, and that's Madoff. You're
mm-hmm.
going to find that Madoff has serious protection throughout the whole system. Big people are dealing with them, people that have their own problems, and they don't want to point out that Madoff is a thief, because Madoff could actually go back and tell them, hey, you're a thief too, which leads me into the Cove thing. Carl Rove. Did you hear about Karl Rove and that the witness that was just died in a plane crash?
I heard he was supposed to testify against Rove. Is that
yes.
correct?
Yes, on the fixing of the ballots. He was an IT engineer, and he had inside information on the way that ballots were being counted and diverted through software. And he was going to give his testimony, and his plane went down.
Yeah, seems there was a congressman a while back and his son who died in Minnesota. Was it Carl Weldon?
Yeah.
It's quite obvious what's going on here. I mean, anyone can say, well, it happened, you know, for this reason, but there's always something behind the scenes that they cover up in the mainstream, of course. This word gets out in the alternative media.
What is the likelihood that Pelosi will instigate any kind of investigation against the outgoing people?
Oh, I would say zero to a billion.
Right, less than zero.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to happen because they know that when the other people get back in power, they won't investigate her.
Yeah, it's more of the same thing. Now, I had read recently where out of all this money that's changing hands, that Obama's people have gotten their hands on $400 billion already. This is before taking office.
How much does it cost to go to Hawaii?
About $400 billion. Is that the right answer?
I don't know. It was just a weekend. They went swimming. I mean, it doesn't cost that much.
Well, it you know, they had to get a truck and move Grandma's furniture, right? Even though she's not really Grandma.
Unbelievable.
It just doesn't end. It doesn't end. But
my solution really is to go back to basics and regroup at the lowest level of government and try to implement something locally that works for the people. And to let them prosper locally and try to avoid connections with the higher part of things, because it's too corrupt to deal with, and we have to pay the price, and we might as well try to insulate ourselves as much as possible by using local institutions and trying to have better local government, and hopefully that might spread and take care of the problem at the top. But if the problem at the top is just so gigantic that it's very hard to deal with it. It's just so pervasive.
Well, we're out of time, Carl. Actually, we went over quite a bit, so we have to thank Seth for allowing us to do that. I know you'll be on again soon, and we covered a lot, but this gives the listening audience some things to think about over the Christmas holiday. This is the sad part of this show is having to discuss these issues just because they're so dark. But at the same time, we have to face them. We have to recognize that they're really there. And it's smoke and mirrors, and it's illusion. And ultimately, we have to rise above that in our consciousness, don't we? And recognize that this is not our system. This is not the way the rest of the universe is created. And we can come up with creative ways of solving these problems. You are one such individual. And I encourage people to go to your various websites. And let me give these out. This is off the top of my head. Myclads.com. That's MYCLADS.com. Or LawMall, that's LAWMALL.com. And the new one is DailyBSD.com. And we'll pretend that stands for
Bill
Smith Feces Deal, right?
Bull Smith Dogs.
Or Bull Landmines Deal. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show, and I want to wish you and your family a Merry Christmas.
And the same to you and your audience. It's been a pleasure once again, and I look forward to it in the near future.
Okay. We'll have you on again in January, I'm sure.
Right.
These problems aren't going to go away immediately, but let's crank it up a couple of notches and get some action going.
Absolutely.
Okay, it's been my pleasure, Carl. Thank you.
Thank you.
Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Want to wish you guys and your families a Merry Christmas, as well as Seth Hendrick, our engineer tonight, and his family, Merry Christmas. And to all the listening audience, wish you a very Merry Christmas. We're going to be on every night this week, even Christmas, so be sure to tune in. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.